Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. I'm your host, Mark King. A Tuesday edition of the show today. Great show for you guys. Jeff Siegel from earlybirdrights.com is going to be on the show today. We're going to talk to him about the Mike Conley trade. We're going to talk to him about the traded player exception, and he's going to give us a better idea of what the Grizzlies might be able to do. Give us what he thinks Jonas Valanciunas is worth on the open market. We'll talk to him about the Grizzlies NBA draft and more coming up in the second and third segment of the show today. Make sure you go subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts from, Spotify, Google Play, Apple iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts from. Just make sure you go subscribe to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast so that you do not miss an episode every single day. We're going to try to keep this going even throughout the offseason, try to get as many episodes as we can in. So make sure you go and subscribe to Locked On Grizzlies. If you have a moment, please go rate and review the show in iTunes. It really helps the rankings, and I would really, really appreciate that. So please go take a minute, rate and review the show in iTunes. Really helps us out. Before we get to Jeff Siegel, I do want to take just a quick minute and talk about this Twitter rumor that I saw yesterday and try to get this out of the way very quickly. There was a rumor going around on social media yesterday, Twitter, that the Miami Heat have contacted the Memphis Grizzlies on swapping Hassan Whiteside for Chandler Parsons. The reason being the Heat are trying to avoid the luxury tax, and they are offering a heavily protected future first-round pick. This would open up the spot to avoid the luxury tax if they waived Ryan Anderson and traded Hassan Whiteside. First of all, let's consider the source. I don't know who this guy is. I've never heard him before. So I would say consider the source when you look at these things. Obviously, something like that I think would come also. You would see that even if it's reported locally from someone, which does happen from time to time, it does get reported locally sometimes. That usually comes out after the fact as well from Shams or Woj. So the fact that it hasn't come out either, you know, when I first saw this, I was obviously very skeptical because, you know, obviously the source, but also why would the Heat do this? It doesn't make sense. If they really wanted to clear the cap space to get under the luxury tax, yes, they could waive Ryan Anderson, which I think they're like $8 million over the luxury tax. I looked it up. So Ryan Anderson would get him $6 million if they did indeed trade contracts for Chandler Parsons. He'd save him about $2 million. So why would you do that when you could probably just trade Hassan Whiteside to someone else's cap space besides the Grizzlies, who have a lot more cap space than everybody else, or trade him for a different player that has cap space and save $15 million, or trade for a player that makes $18 million or something like that. And then attach a pick that way instead of attaching a pick to Chandler Parsons, who makes roughly the same amount of money and is on the same length of a deal as Hassan Whiteside. So, on the surface, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There are a lot of other teams that have the space to trade Hassan Whiteside into, a lot of bad teams that would probably be willing to rent their cap space for the year. Hassan Whiteside's only a 1 year deal. So there are a lot of other teams that would probably be able to rent their cap space in exchange for a first round pick. And you would probably also save way more than just being able to trade Chandler Parsons and save $2 million. You could save probably way more than that on a different trade with Hassan Whiteside. And you could probably still waive Ryan Anderson and still save the $6 million. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, let's be very, very clear. If the Grizzlies and the new front office found a way to trade Chandler Parsons and get a first-round pick out of it, it would be amazing. It's not going to happen. Like, you can't trade Chandler Parsons' contract for like a ham sandwich right now. I don't think that trading it for a first-round pick is going to happen at all. So the rumor of Hassan Whiteside being able to be moved to the Grizzlies, who, by the way, would be a useful piece, Hassan Whiteside, for this team to be able to just play all year. Chandler Parsons can't even play very much. So, again, I don't think that's going to happen at all. It's very much a rumor. Again, consider the source, the fact that nothing else has come out about this from a bigger source. And it has. Please tell me. Please hit me up and let me know. I haven't seen it, but I could be wrong. But I would say consider the source when we look at these things. It's not going to happen. Hassan Whiteside and moving off Chandler Parsons' contracts, it's not going to happen. They're just going to be able to go through this year with Chandler Parsons' money on the books. And next year, when it comes out the books, they're going to have a lot of money. And that'll be it. And it'll just be bite the bullet and just get through one more year of this Chandler Parsons contract. If they somehow found a way to trade Chandler Parsons, even for a second-round pick or anything, literally a ham sandwich, I would be happy and ecstatic and surprised they were able to do that. So I would just, again, consider the source. Let's take a quick break. We will be back with Jeff Siegel from earlybirdrights.com. We'll talk to him about all things Grizzlies coming up right after the break. Welcome back to the show. Another great edition of the show for you guys today. Jeff Siegel joining us from the earlybirdrights.com. As I mentioned yesterday's show, going to give us a little bit of insight on the Grizzlies cap room, that infamous traded player exception now that everybody seems to be talking about in the world of the Grizzlies, and probably I think most people don't quite understand it. So we're going to talk with him about that as well. But first, what's going on, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. And again, I appreciate you taking the time out and joining us today. I want to start off and get your thoughts on the Grizzlies draft. I think a lot of people seem to like it, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what they did with John Moran, obviously going up and getting Brandon Clark. Thoughts on the Grizzlies, how the Grizzlies panned out after everything shook out on Thursday.
I mean, I think Ja was the number two pick for a few months now. So we sort of knew that he was going to be a Grizzly. So from that perspective, it was good that they didn't do something weird and go with RJ Barrett. You know, from that, you know, it was just sort of once Zion went off the board, you knew that Ja was the next guy. We knew that they were going to take him, you know, for the last few months. Then Conley got traded, and it was even clearer that Morant was going to be their guy. So, you know, I think it was the right move, obviously, to take him. I think he's going to be their point guard of the future now. He's somebody you like the upside with him as a primary playmaker. If he can really round out the rest of his game as a finisher at the basket, if he can shoot a little bit better, if he can play any defense whatsoever, that would be really nice. You know, so I think there are things to worry about a little bit with Ja, but it's not the upside of having a primary playmaker at the point guard spot with the kind of passing that he can bring to the table is worth any of the downside risk of him, you know, not being a good defender, not being able to shoot, all of that stuff. You know, you can work that out with the coaching staff.
Do you think that there was there a real debate, but should there have been a real debate between RJ Barrett and Ja Morant? And B, on Ja, do you think those things that you mentioned, like obviously his shooting is a concern, like you mentioned, his defense is a concern. Do you think those are things that he could develop in the NBA, and those things kind of out, you know, being able to develop those outweigh the intangibles, like you mentioned, the passing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can work with a guy on a jump shot. I think that's one of the primary skills that you see guys evolve, you know, really rapidly from college to the NBA. I think that's something that when you get into a gym with an NBA, a professional level shooting coach, especially coming from a smaller school that, you know, likely does not have the sort of NBA caliber coaching that he'll get in Memphis. I think that you can definitely see how lots and lots of guys over the years have improved on their jump shot, you know, especially at the point guard position. You know, whether he can improve on the defensive end is going to come down to like mentality and stuff like that. He has the physical tools to get there, 6'3", 6'7" wingspan. He needs to just sort of, he needs to buy in on that end of the floor. He needs to just improve on some of the fundamentals, improve on his effort level, frankly, on that end of the floor. So I think, you know, he can, the jump shot, I'm not as worried about. The defensive stuff is a little bit worrying, but, you know, if he never turns around as a decent point guard defender, that's also not the end of the world either, because you don't really need that from a point guard. You can always sort of, you know, figure that out around with the other four guys on the floor.
And what did you think of the Grizzlies going up and greeting Brandon Clark, someone that I guess a lot of people thought was going to be a lottery pick? I mean, there are always cause for concern when a player starts to fall like that. But what are your thoughts on Brandon Clark?
I mean, I love Brandon Clarke. I had him number 8 on my board. I think he's just going to be a terrific defensive player. The pairing of him and Jaren Jackson Jr. is just going to just envelop teams in sadness. I mean, it's going to be so great for the Grizzlies defensively. They are going to just swallow teams whole. And so, you know, that's part of the Ja Morant calculus is if he's not 100% of what he could be on the defensive end, Clark and Jackson are going to just make up for all of that because that pairing in the front court with Jackson's ability to slide a little bit on the perimeter, his length under the basket. Clark doesn't necessarily have that same length, but he is just one of the better athletes in the draft. I mean, obviously Zion is Zion, but of the non superstar in the non Zion section of the draft, Clark's got a serious contention for the second best athlete in the draft overall. So I think he's going to give them an element of defensive playmaking that is, you know, going to be really interesting for them. You know, he's going to have to knock down the jumper on offense. The spacing, if Jaren Jackson is also, you know, working on his jump shot, is going to be a little bit off at the beginning of their careers together. But, you know, between the two of them, somebody's going to be able to space the floor while the other one's rolling to the rim. If both can, then you've got that duality of options for Ja Morant as the point guard. So I really like Brandon Clarke. I really like the fit for him in Memphis, both on defense and offense. And so, you know, I thought it was well worth what they paid to move up a couple spots and make sure they got their guy. I mean, you look at some of the other trades of teams moving around in the draft. You know, Philadelphia, for example, moved up from 24 to 20, right about in the same range. They moved up 4 spots and had to give up the number 33 overall pick to do it. And the Grizzlies wanted to move up just
Right.
from 23 to 21, which is a smaller jump, but it's still in that same sort of range. They got their guy and had to only give up a 2024 second round pick, which is a lot less valuable than the number 33 overall pick. So I think they did a really masterful job of working that trade with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They got their guy. Obviously, they got Ja at the top of the draft. So, you know, Clark was a perfect pick for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, it seemed to be the opportunity cost of getting Brandon Clarke was, like you mentioned, a 2024 pick, which they, and I believe they already have another second round pick in that year as well. So, it's not much to be able to get a guy that you're really, really positive about. And if a guy that, you know, you feel strongly and you have a conviction about going and getting someone like that is never a bad thing. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We will finish up with Jeff Single after the break. We'll talk about this traded player exception, Jonas Valanciunas, and the Mike Conley trade. Welcome back to the show, talking with Jeff Siegel, founder of earlybirdrights.com. If you guys have any questions about cap info, salary caps, any of that kind of stuff, which I know is not always the sexiest thing in the NBA, but it's something that definitely needs to be paid attention to, go to earlybirdrights.com. It's a super useful website. I use it myself, but I do want to get your thoughts, Jeff, on the Mike Conley trade. What were your initial thoughts of that? I think I was okay with it, and then when I dug deeper into the trade itself, the protections and kind of the cap relief that they got, I begin to like it more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the right trade for them to get out from under Conley's contract. I think, I mean, he obviously is a very, very good player, but him being a very, very good player is not necessarily what Memphis needs right now. You know, they're not trying to compete for championships right now. They're not going to try to compete over the rest of his contract, you know, probably, you know, over the rest of his, you know, real prime as an athlete. He doesn't fit in there on their timeline, especially the fact that they got number 2. Ja Morant was coming to town. It made sense that they needed to move on from him. And, you know, the package that they got back, you know, a couple of decent role players and Jay Crowder. You know, Jay Crowder on a very good contract at $7.8 million. Kyle Korver, we'll see whether they pick up his guarantee or not. Grayson Allen was just a first-round draft pick, kind of disappointed in his rookie year last year, but he was, you know, you still have 3 years of team control there. He was quite a good pickup for them. And then of course the two first round picks, one of which they packaged to move up for Brandon Clarke, like we talked about in the last segment. And then the future pick, which has some weird protections on it, but moves out over the next handful of years, depending on where the Utah Jazz finish in the standings. So, you know, from a value perspective, I think they got everything they could have asked for a point guard who is on a little bit on the older side, has a relatively large contract at 2 years and $67 million left on that deal. But, you know, obviously Conley is very good. He's one of the, you know, 8 to 10 best point guards in the league. He's going to help Utah in a big way. You can see that, that Utah really was interested in taking him on and taking his, you know, taking on his contract and getting his services. So, you know, I think that both sides, you know, came out of this deal with what they wanted. Utah gets their point guard of the present with Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, and they're going to try to compete for a championship, you know, next year and the year after, whereas Memphis can kind of hit the reset button finally and really, you know, that's the last big contract on their books that extends past this coming year. You know, obviously the Chandler Parsons contract is still on their books, but that'll expire in 2020. And so now they can really move forward in the Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., Brandon Clark era.
Yeah, it's it was definitely interesting. I said the more I dug into that Mike Conley trade, the more I began to like it. Just like you mentioned, this is a team that is entering a rebuild phase. And with that trade, they created a $25 million. I think it's on your site. You have that as a $25 million trade exception. What is something like this useful? How is this useful for the Grizzlies going forward?
The traded player exception is going to be interesting to see what, how they want to use it, because if they're willing to spend some extra money, which is maybe not precisely what they want to do, you know, especially when they're going into a rebuild and the revenue is not quite there as you know, a Grizzlies team that's, you know, not a high revenue team. This is not like the New York Knicks or the Los Angeles Lakers where they're, you know, they're making a lot of money even in the down years. But if they're willing to take on some more money, they could get, they can use that pick to take on draft picks and take on bad salary from other teams. I think that's the biggest thing that they can use it for based on where they are in their rebuild process. Is if there's a guy out there who's making $17 million in Bismack Biyombo, say, from Charlotte, and Charlotte, who is desperately trying to get out of the tax after Kemba Walker signs his new contract, if that all comes to pass and they're trying to get out of Biyombo's contract for 1 year of $17 million, Memphis can just take that contract without having to match salary like you usually have to see in these trades. Memphis can stay over the cap, can re-sign Jonas Valanciunas and DeLon Wright, but then also have this trade exception and just take a big contract in. And if Charlotte's willing to part with a first-round pick and a second-round pick, say, to get rid of him because that's such a big savings for them, then Memphis can do that while still not having to use cap space to do it. So I think that's, you know, it would cost them, of course, the $17 million, and ownership might not totally love the fact that they're going to just pay out that extra money. But from an asset perspective and from a basketball perspective, building this team going forward, if there's a deal out there to be made with a team like Charlotte or Washington for Jan Mahinmi, Orlando for Timothy Mozgov, there are contracts out there that teams are going to look to move. And so I think that's where Memphis can use this trade a player exception.
Yeah, it would definitely be interesting, like you mentioned, to see what they do with it. You mentioned Jonas Valanciunas. He obviously opted out of his $17.6 million player option this year. There are some thinking that he wants 4 years around the league, that he will be trying to negotiate with the Grizzlies for a long-term deal. I guess, what do you think, now that there's been a lot of centers, and I've talked about this a lot on my show already, now there's a lot of centers that have opted out that are kind of depressing the market a little bit more. What do you think Jonas Valanciunas makes on the open market? And do you think there should be a cap for the Grizzlies just to walk away at that? You know, there's just too much for the Grizzlies and they should just walk away and move on from Jonas Valanciunas altogether.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly is a number where if he wants, you know, $15 million that they like definitely need to walk away from him at that number. If they, you know, I would imagine that the fact that he opted out would indicate that he's at least talked to the Grizzlies beforehand and sort of gotten a feel for what his contract would be, because he's not going to opt out of $17 million because he's not going to be able to make up that money in year one. So it's really all about, does he have something on the table that's better than that? So is it 2 years and $25 million from the Grizzlies? If it gets into like 2 years and $30 million, then I don't think that Memphis is in a position where that makes sense for them. It, you know, it works for, like, they can do it without triggering the luxury tax or anything like that, but it's not, you know, not necessarily the direction that I would go in that particular circumstance. You know, on the absolute open market, if Memphis just decided, like, we're not, you know, I know you guys just opted out, but we're not interested in bringing Valanciunas back.
Sure.
You know, is he worth $10 to $12 million a year. Like it's he's not necessarily like a surefire starting center, and those guys who are not absolute like high end starting centers really get squeezed by the fact that there are just so many centers out there and so many guys who can play centers who used to be power forwards but now can play center, and the center market is just so, you know, so wide, and there's so much supply of decent quality centers that Valanciunas might, if he ends up on the totally open market without a deal made with the Grizzlies sort of beforehand, he might end up with, you know, $10 to $12 million a year and really sort of regret, you know, taking that $17 million off the table.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think I had him pegged at, you know, $11 to $12 million a year. And I think you're right. I think he's a guy that, you know, isn't some of a surefire starter, doesn't have one skill that you got to have. You know, he's not Brook Lopez, who really developed a 3-point shot this year. It is a very different player and kind of a throwback where there is a very hard cap where the Grizzlies should just walk away now that also they have Brandon Clark in the mix. They're still going to need more bigs, but it definitely eases the pain a little bit. Jeff, I appreciate it, man. We will do it again sometime. Thank you for coming on again. Jeff Siegel, founder of earlybirdrights.com. If you have any questions about cap stuff, anything at all, go over there. He has a Patreon. Also subscribe to that. Super, super awesome dude. Thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on and giving us a little more insight on the draft and the traded player reception and Jonas Valanciunas.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.